military rule, and nobody who cares for democracy would like it either. What can happen is what did happen between 2006 and 2008, which was a period when the military supported what was called a caretaker government. This was a government of wise people and economists and bureaucrats and academics and so on, who tried to help ease the transition to power. And she won after that. The election that she won in 2008 was because there had been a caretaker government in place. Bangladesh's constitution allowed that. But she abrogated that part of the constitution, which is why that concept has gone. But those are the kind of things that can happen. And maybe from these highly patriotic and spirited student demonstrators, we'll see a new form of leadership emerge.
Well, Salil Tripathi, we want to thank you so much for being with us, author of The Colonel Who Would Not Repent, The Bangladesh War and Its Unquiet Legacy. Salil is on the board of Penn International, a contributing editor to The Caravan. That does it for today's broadcast. We have a job opening at Democracy Now!, Director of Development, leading our fundraising. You can check out the details at democracynow.org and apply there. Democracy Now! is produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Sharifa Bokadus, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tarmi Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. This month's Board of Directors meeting will be held on Monday, July 29th at 6 p.m. The meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held. Hey, KBOO listeners, you want to tune in to PDX Progressive Talk Radio every fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m., where we do a deep dive into issues that matter most to our community. Every month, we're taking on homelessness, community policing, supporting local small businesses, and so much more. We're here to foster solutions and move progressive change. Brought to you by our dedicated team, me, Sherry Morish, and our host, Moses Ross, this show is your go-to for progressive dialogue and local action. Don't miss out on the conversations that are shaping Portland and the Pacific Northwest. Join us on PDX Progressive Talk Radio every fourth Wednesday at 7 p.m. right here on KBOO, where together, we're the voice of change.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, 4 mega wildfires burn in Oregon, and officials shut down the Malheur National Forest. An Oregon woman was imprisoned for 21 extra months in a state prison mistake. And in international news, the chaos brought by the CrowdStrike outage is nearly over, but investigations into how and why it happened are just beginning. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 23rd, 2024. I'm Eric Leuschner. 4 megafires are currently burning in Oregon forests, and officials have closed the Malheur National Forest because of wildfire risks. In total, there are over 30 large wildfires burning in the state. Megafires are ones that span more than 100,000 acres. In Oregon, the Durkee and Cow Valley fires northwest of Ontario are spanning that size. The Cow Valley fire is older, starting on the 11th, with 78% containment. The Durkee fire was started by lightning strikes less than a week ago, and already it's burned over 200,000 acres, 0% containment as of this afternoon. The Falls fire has burned some 130,000 acres northwest of Burns. Gusty winds have pushed some of these fires to expand a lot over the past few days, including the Falls fire. It's 40% contained so far. The other mega fire is the Lone Rock fire in Gilliam County, also 40% contained. Lightning strikes Monday started a number of smaller fires across the state as well. It's the fast-moving wildfire activity that's prompted Forest Service officials to completely shut down the Malheur National Forest. This is the first time in the history of this national preserve that the whole forest has been closed to the public, though there have been partial closures in the past. During the closure, the public is not allowed to enter any of the 1.7 million acres of the forest. Oregon State Parks has also banned all campfires in its parks, with some including limits on propane or pellet stoves. People should only use them for cooking. Campers can find the latest fire updates in Oregon State Parks at stateparks.oregon.gov. Wildfires have also closed Interstate 84 in eastern Oregon to help firefighters battling the Durkee fire. All lanes of eastbound 84 from Baker City to Ontario are closed, and the westbound lanes are closed from La Grande to Baker City. ODOT officials say that travelers should delay their trips through this area if they can, plan alternative routes while staying on main highways, and check tripcheck.com to see the conditions on their route. ODOT said, quote, "Do not follow GPS direction or detour on county or forest roads, as these are not suitable for interstate traffic and may have ongoing fire activity," end quote. An Oregon woman who was imprisoned at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility was released without warning after serving 21 months more than her sentence. Bridget McDermott should have been free in July of 2022 after serving 14 years for a 2010 robbery, burglary, and kidnapping conviction in Lane County. She's not alone. Five other prisoners have been released after the Department of Corrections did an internal review of its math to calculate release dates. The calculation takes into a number of factors, like time served, concurrent and consecutive sentencing, plus things that can take time off the sentence, like good behavior. McDermott had to beg to stay the night at the prison after she learned of her release. Usually there's a lot of planning put into place for the 6 months leading up to someone's release. Instead, McDermott was pulled aside, told the corrections agency, quote, "really screwed up," and told to pack her things. The agency doesn't have a plan or policy in place for how to deal with mistakes like this one that impacted McDermott, and it's not totally clear how the mistake exactly happened. McDermott says she's not sure what action she might take in response to her extra 21 months in state prison, but the Oregon Justice Resource Center has taken her on as a client to see what her legal options might be. On Friday, a software glitch in the cybersecurity firm CrowdStrike ground many businesses to a halt. Airlines, banks, and hospitals were majorly impacted, delaying or canceling flights or keeping people from being able to access their bank accounts. Local blood donation center Bloodworks Northwest lost an estimated 250 donations at a critical time of year. The travel chaos the CrowdStrike update sparked is mostly over, but not for Delta Airlines. They've canceled 471 flights worldwide, even as their competitors have gotten a handle on their internet systems. Delta CEO says the outage from CrowdStrike effectively broke one of their crew tracking tools, meaning they couldn't coordinate the work of pilots and flight attendants. The U.S. Department of Transportation opened an investigation into Delta's customer service today. Would-be passengers posted videos to social media showing thousands sleeping in airports, unable to get home, or even a hotel. U.S. House leaders are calling on the CEO of CrowdStrike, George Kurtz, to testify to Congress about the company's role. The outage from their software update on Microsoft Windows caused global disruptions. Lina Khan is the chair of the U.S. Federal Trade Commission. Khan tweeted, quote, "All too often these days, a single glitch results in a system-wide outage affecting industries from healthcare to airlines to banks and auto dealers. Millions of people and businesses pay the price. These incidents reveal how concentration can create fragile systems," end quote. It is not yet known whether antitrust legal claims will be brought against the company. Democrats consolidate support behind Vice President Harris. Republicans threaten legal action over the changes to the presidential ticket, and a possible bipartisan consensus forms on the failure of the Secret Service to protect former President Trump. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Joe Biden's legacy of accomplishment over the past 3 years is unmatched in modern history. In one term, he has already, yes, you may clap.
Vice President Kamala Harris says President Joe Biden has accomplished more in one term than other presidents have in two. In her first appearance since Biden ended his re-election campaign, Harris touted Biden's character and said he's looking forward to being back on the road following his recovery from COVID. Democrats are consolidating behind Harris, including a majority of lawmakers. Former Speaker Nancy Pelosi signed on, calling Harris brilliantly astute. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries also offered praise, but stopped short of an endorsement.
Vice President Kamala Harris has excited the community. She's excited the House Democratic Caucus, and she's exciting the country.
The change has also reignited fundraising. The Harris campaign and allied groups say they've raised around $250 million since Biden bowed out. Legally, no candidate is nominated until delegates to the convention vote. Harris says she plans to earn and win that nomination, and so far, 1,000 delegates have told the AP they plan to support her. It's unclear if she'll face any challengers next month in Chicago, but many of her potential rivals are endorsing her. Republicans are threatening legal action. House Speaker Mike Johnson says the more than 14 million voters who backed Biden in the primaries should not be disenfranchised.
It would be wrong and I think unlawful in accordance to some of these states' rules for a handful of people to go in a back room and switch it out because they don't like the candidate any longer.
Republicans are also calling on Biden to resign, saying if he's not fit to run, he's not fit to serve. Former President Donald Trump has kept up attacks on social media, claiming without proof that Biden's advisors hid the truth about his health and calling his COVID diagnosis a fake excuse to drop out. Meanwhile, lawmakers in both parties have called on Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle to resign after the Trump assassination attempt. At a contentious hours-long hearing, Cheadle agreed the event was a colossal failure, but repeatedly cited a continuing investigation when asked for details. South Carolina Republican Nancy Mace accused Cheadle of lying.
These are important questions that the American people want answers to, and you're just dodging and talking around it in generalities.
New Mexico Democratic Congresswoman Melanie Stansberry says she's not surprised at the bipartisan frustration with the agency.
This is not just a single shooting. This is about national security and the security of our democracy.
Cheadle promised lawmakers a report on the agency's handling of the event in 60 days, but several lawmakers called that unacceptable. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
As President Biden announces his exit from the race for the presidency, Native leaders praise his historic level of support for Native issues. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas from KMBA in Anchorage, Alaska, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. Native leaders are reacting to President Joe Biden pulling out of the 2024 race for president. Biden announced his decision Sunday as Vice President Kamala Harris runs for president. Native leaders say President Biden has had a long history supporting Native issues since his time serving as Vice President to Barack Obama. Native leaders say President Biden has invested in many Native issues, including earlier this year, investing in Indigenous communities' access to emerging climate issues and protecting sacred sites. Native leaders say most noteworthy is his pick of Deb Haaland, a Pueblo woman, as the Secretary of the Interior. After news spread of Biden dropping out, Alaska Native leaders were quick to react. Rosita Worrell is the president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. She says that amongst all presidents, Biden is the most supportive of Indigenous people.
But I think a lot of people also don't know that he was also an excellent president for Native Americans. And, you know, he's appointed more Native Americans than any other president.
When asked what the future of Indigenous people would look like if Vice President Kamala Harris was to win the presidential election, Worrell believes support would continue to be strong, if not stronger.
I think with Kamala Harris that we're going to see not only continued support, but probably expanded support. I always say that having a woman in a decision-making position makes a difference because I think, first of all, we think like mothers and we care about our communities, we care about our children. I think, you know, she has a record already of working with diversity, underprivileged communities. I have no doubt in my mind that she would continue that kind of support that we saw under President Biden.
Worrell had strong opinions on what would happen if former President Donald Trump were to win this year's election.
Well, I guess I have to be very frank that I don't think that a man that has such a record with women, you know, a sexual abuser, the crimes he's committed, I just cannot understand how people support him. I just don't understand it. I would have, you know, I think it would be very unfortunate to have him in office again.
Native leaders will be among those attending the August Democratic National Convention in Chicago, where the party's nominee will be picked. An Eastern Shoshone tribal member has received a Wayfinder Award from National Geographic for his work to restore bison to indigenous lands. Wyoming Public Radio's Hannah Haberman has more.
The National Geographic Wayfinder Award recognizes people who are pushing the boundaries in science, conservation, education, technology, and storytelling. And Jason Valdez fits the bill. He's the buffalo manager for the Eastern Shoshone tribe and has helped bring more than 100 bison back to the Wind River Reservation in the last 10 years. Valdez says pushing boundaries in his work looks like creating a paradigm shift, where bison are recognized as wildlife, not livestock.
They're ecosystem engineers. They are keystone species. They store carbon. They increase plant and animal biodiversity. All of those are reasons enough to recognize this animal and its importance on the landscape, but we have a tendency to treat them like cattle.
For Valdez, that shift means taking down fences and restoring migration corridors and wildlife habitat. The National Geographic Award comes with $50,000 and the opportunity to apply for more funding in the future. I'm Hannah Haberman.
I'm Jill Freitas.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Coast Range Radio. At 6 o'clock, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, For the Wild. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be hot and sunny with a high of 81 degrees. Today in history, in 2012, a solar storm or an unusually large coronal mass ejection was emitted by the sun, and it barely missed the Earth by 9 days. If it had hit, it would have caused over $2.5 trillion in damage to electrical equipment around the world. The quote of the day is from American-British novelist Raymond Chandler, known for his detective fiction. He wrote, quote, "The law isn't justice. It's a very imperfect mechanism. If you press exactly the right buttons and are also lucky, justice may show up in the answer. A mechanism is all the law ever was intended to be." The American Federation of Teachers announced support for Kamala Harris to be the Democratic nominee for president at its annual conference on Monday. As Suzanne Potter reports, AFT represents more than 120,000 California educators through the California Federation of Teachers.
After an historic weekend, politics turned out to be the major topic at a national meeting of more than 3,500 teachers' union members that kicked off Monday. The American Federation of Teachers is one of the groups that has endorsed Kamala Harris for president. At its conference in Houston, AFT President Randy Weingarten praised the Biden-Harris administration's commitment to public education while accusing Republicans of undermining workers' rights and attacking academic freedom.
When the history books are written about this moment, let them record that we the people united, mobilized, and voted down this existential threat to democracy and freedom.
Conservatives have argued that public employee unions are too powerful. Weingarten also criticized the Trump administration's support of school vouchers, arguing they largely help wealthy families pay for private or religious schools, diverting funds from public education. The union leader also slammed efforts across the country to ban controversial books in school libraries and restrict teaching on history, social justice, and climate change.
They fear what we do. The teaching of reason, of critical thinking, of honest history, of pluralism, because their brand of greed, of power, of privilege cannot survive in a democracy of diverse, educated citizens.
Cassandra Curiel, who heads the United Educators of San Francisco, believes the administrations of Governor Gavin Newsom and President Joe Biden have improved education funding in recent years, but she says much more needs to be done.
Pre-COVID, California was the 46th funded public education system in the country. And post-COVID, we've now risen to 36. And as the fifth largest economy in the world, we really have a moral obligation to fund public education like we mean it.
Leaders at the conference also called for stricter gun laws to reduce the likelihood of school shootings going forward. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Recent storms and extensive flooding across parts of New England have raised concerns about agricultural pollution making its way into local waterways. As the number of climate change-related weather events increase, environmental groups say the health and safety of those living downstream could be at risk. Catherine Carley has more in Maine.
As the Atlantic coast braces for what could be an active hurricane season, environmental groups are warning about the dangers of agricultural pollution. They say large amounts of animal waste, often stored in unsecured outdoor lagoons, make already harrowing events such as flash floods an even greater health and safety risk. Chrissy Kasserman with the group Food and Water Watch says heavy downpours can spread toxins to local drinking water supplies and area farm fields.
We see climate change making these storms bigger, they're more intense. They flood these manure lagoons, which creates a really potentially deadly mess of pollution for people who live downstream that have to deal with.
Kasserman says it's often low-income communities that are closest to agricultural waste sites and are most at risk. She says the cost of cleanup for drinking water sources after storms often falls to ratepayers and well owners themselves. Agricultural waste not only poses a risk during and after a storm, but is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions, which scientists say are fueling more climate change-related weather events. It's estimated livestock production alone accounts for nearly 15% of worldwide emissions. Kasserman says federal legislation known as the Farm System Reform Act would impose a moratorium on construction of new and expanding factory farms to better protect nearby communities.
The answer is to move toward a more sustainable form of agriculture that doesn't involve confining large numbers of animals and their manure in one very small space.
Kasserman says it will take strong political will to stand up to Big Ag to get that done. Meanwhile, forecasters are warning residents along the Atlantic coast to prepare for an above-normal number of hurricanes this season, with up to 25 named storms, along with 4 to 7 major hurricanes by the end of November. For Maine News Service, I'm Catherine Carley.
Camping skills could help people prepare for weather disasters. Many of those skills used while camping can help keep people safe during emergencies. Dr. Anthony Lysowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lysowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In Los Angeles, a class on camping has also prepared participants to survive weather disasters, which are becoming more common as the climate warms. Tim Jones, an outdoor educator, says many of the skills used while camping can help people stay safe during emergencies.
During a disaster, you may find yourself in a situation that emulates being in a campout. There's no electricity. There's no lighting.
Jones teamed up with the nonprofit Climate Resolve and Listos California to teach two Camping 101 and Emergency Preparedness classes at a park. The classes were free and taught in both English and Spanish to around 100 participants in total. Attendees learned camping and survival skills like how to pitch a tent, cook meals at a campsite, and filter water.
Roughing it doesn't have to be rough. We're preparing them to go into the outdoors looking like they got their act together.
They also learned how to pack an emergency go bag and make an evacuation plan. Those tips and others covered in the class can be found in a workbook that the organizers have shared freely online. They hope the information empowers people to enjoy the outdoors for fun and prepares them to stay safe during disasters. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Whoever wins the U.S. presidency will have big influence in the international community. As one commentator says, the gathering of the Trump clan at the Republican National Convention brought back the same corrupt, election-denying, felonious crew that had populated the first Trump administration. If Trump wins in November, the U.S. will have a leadership that Democratic allies and friends abroad will find untrustworthy and unpredictable. We now go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Former FBI Director James Comey once compared Donald Trump's gang of loyalists to the mafia. "Holy cow," he said, "they are trying to make each of us an amica nostra, friend of ours, to draw us in." And draw in people Trump did. Cabinet members and other officials, campaign workers, lawyers, talking heads at Fox. The very apt comparison with gangster politics played itself out once again at the Republican National Convention. The cast of characters indicted and convicted was worthy of mafia status, starting, of course, with the ex-president, a felon. There's Peter Navarro, fresh from his four-month prison term. "I went to prison so you wouldn't have to," Navarro told the audience. "I am your wake-up call." He got a one-minute standing ovation. Then there's Rudy Giuliani, convicted in the fake elector scheme, and Paul Manafort, pardoned by Trump for his role in the Russia election interference case. Apparently not attending were Michael Flynn, the disgraced former national security advisor, whom Trump pardoned and has promised to bring back, Steve Bannon, who is in jail on contempt of Congress charges, and Roger Stone, Trump's henchman, also pardoned. We'll probably meet all of these people again if there's a Trump 2. Election deniers from the states were well represented at the RNC, headed by Trump's latest acolyte, J.D. Vance. As reported by NPR, there were three fake electors from Arizona, including two state senators, five from Nevada, three from Georgia, and two from Michigan. They're all under federal criminal indictments and required special permission from a judge to travel to Milwaukee. Election deniers from Pennsylvania, New Mexico, and Wisconsin were also present as delegates at the RNC. When interviewed, none of these people would acknowledge their illegal acts or false accusations. They were all actually victims of political persecution, you see. And let's not forget the blatantly corrupt in attendance, headlined by Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump. They used their positions as senior advisors in the Trump administration to make millions of dollars in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia and Qatar in particular, and in China. And they're still actively peddling influence. Kushner is engaged in major real estate deals with Serbia and Albania, luxury homes and hotels in resorts made possible by high-level contacts Kushner cultivated earlier. Kushner, Ivanka, and Richard Grenell have traveled to the Balkans and met with senior Albanian officials, the New York Times reports. Grenell was an acting director of national intelligence under Trump, as well as ambassador to Germany and special envoy to the Balkans. Trump himself continues to invest in the Middle East. Right now, he's involved in a development deal in Oman, along with Saudi real estate interests. The Saudis, in turn, have shown a strong interest in Kushner's Albania projects. This tallies with the key elements of Kushner's portfolio. After Trump's defeat, Kushner formed an investment firm, Affinity Partners, which has $3 billion in funding, 99% from foreign sources. Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, $2 billion. Investors in Qatar, $200 million. And the United Arab Emirates, another $200 million. And Foxconn, a leading Taiwan electronics manufacturer. So far, Kushner's firm has invested about $1.2 billion, almost all in companies abroad. It's tag-team corruption. As we all know, all the charges, jail terms, and corrupt practices will be history if Trump wins in November. His thoroughly politicized Justice Department will take care of that. Official corruption, thanks to the Supreme Court's decision on presidential immunity, will largely vanish as Trump and family erase the line between public and private financial moves. Bribery, for example, need no longer be hidden in dealings with foreign governments, companies, and other entities. Important foreign policy decisions related, for example, to arms sales, multinational corporation investments, technology transfers, social media companies, environmental protection, repression of human rights, and U.S. force deployments will be thoroughly transactional. I wonder, for example, what Elon Musk has bought in return for his $45 million a month pledge to a pro-Trump super PAC, or how much environmental deregulation the fossil fuel industry has bought in return for its contributions to Trump's re-election. In short, U.S. foreign and national security policies will have a for sale sign out front. What will not fade away with a Trump win is the national embarrassment of having a criminal gang represent the U.S. abroad and in international organizations. Of course, that will hardly matter to autocratic governments, but it might well generate considerable mistrust among democracies. After all, if a U.S. decision is open to the highest bidder, and if the president is above the law and has a long history of fraudulent behavior, how good is the word of the United States of America? I'm Mel Gertov for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, July 23rd, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Suzanne Potter, Jill Freitas, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.